Hey guys, what's up? It is week 325. Let's hop right into the reviews for you. The first one up is from Dark Force Entertainment, and it is Instinct to Kill. Now, this has Mark Dukakis in it and Kadeem Hardison, and they were both in, what was that one that they were in? Came out in the 90s, Drive. That was a lot of fun, good action movie. I think 88 Films put it out on 4K, actually. So this one I had not really heard of, to be honest. It was kind of a late 90s, really early 2000s kind of thriller, action movie. And like I said, I had not heard of this one. There's dozens of movies like that. The lead in here is a really fun martial artist. He pops up in one of the John Wick's films, and he's in Brotherhood of the Wolf. And he's in, of course, Drive, like I said. He's a lot of fun. Should have been in a lot more, I think. Should have probably got a little bit more name recognition than he actually did. But he's always been entertaining to me. So essentially, this film follows that of a serial killer who is a master of disguise, as they put it, you know, as the film puts it. It's based off a novel, actually, which I've not read, but it was fairly popular from my understanding. And the person who plays the serial killer, Tim Abel, I believe is the actor's name, or is it Tim Abel? So, yeah. This is a really go-for-it kind of performance. And in the interview on here with the actor, he mentioned that he read the novel a couple times, and he tried to bring in aspects of the novel to incorporate and everything like that into the movie, which weren't in the script. It's produced by Mark Lester. Mark Lester obviously did some great films, including Commando, Class of 1984, Class of 99, a bunch of others, you know, Armed and Dangerous, Firestarter. He directed those movies. This one he produced. So essentially what we have here, like I said, is a serial killer story about a cop, and he's a master of disguise. He marries this young girl. He's been following her whole life, so he can manipulate her. All these kind of things here. She finds out who he is, and he ends up getting arrested by his partner. And he ends up doing prison time, of course. He escapes, and his number one person on this hit list is, of course, his ex-wife. He wants her out. He wants to take her out of the picture. Now, Mark in this film is kind of an ex-cop as well, but he's a martial arts expert. He's a protector. He knows how to survive. He has a tragic backstory and everything like that, as you would expect a kind of single kind of guy like this would in an action film. So his job is to protect this girl and train her how to protect herself. Of course, the serial killer kind of, through a bunch of disguises, is getting closer and closer, trying to figure out who she is. And the body count piles up, including a lot of loved ones to her. As far as the performances are concerned, I think that Mark always does a good job. He's really solid. I think the serial killer is a very lively performance. Now, listening to the special features and stuff, I learned that it was all ADR'd. So it takes a little bit of a step away, unfortunately, from a lot of actors, almost everyone. It takes a step away from the performances in general. But I think that some of them do come across pretty fun. The one thing that this movie being in like HD and Blu-ray, the Master Disguise stuff, it really doesn't work. I mean, we as an audience know, but I don't know if they're ever trying to pull a fast one while watching it. Like, you realize that that's Tim Abel. And, like, because of that, like, during parts of the script, you're like, I don't... And C. Courtney Joyner was one of the script writers on here. He directed Lurking Fear, and he wrote a bunch of movies like Puppet Master 3 and a slew of other ones. And his scripts are usually solid. His movies are fun. One of the transfers he directed to, I think three, maybe. So I'm just like, I know that there's probably three different writers in here, but stuff like where they're having this squad to look at, to try to find the serial killer, and the guy, Kadeem is talking up front of everyone. And of course, the serial killer is disguised as this old police officer. I'm like, you're telling me that nobody recognizes this old police officer. So they're just going to, you know, it's so obviously him. There's stuff like that, but it kind of plays into like some comedy and stuff. The fight scenes are decent at the end. It's an okay movie. It's not my absolute favorite. You know, it's a low budget kind of thriller action flick. The soundtrack's not my jam, and you know, it's just a product of its time. There's nothing you can really hold against it. You know, it's better than a lot of the, you know, duplicate scores. But the one thing that really holds this film back 100% is that there's a lot of stingers in the sound effects, and it's meow, and they use it every time there's a scene change, every time there's something dramatic. It's the same stinger. You've heard this stinger in a million movies, and it's a terrible stinger. It sticks out like a sore thumb. I've seen it in movies a lot. And it always dates him. It always gets repetitive. It's kind of like that creaking gate that you heard a million times, or the Wilhelm scream times five, because it's a stinger and it ruins all dramatic moments and tension and stuff like that. It's not, I'm probably being exaggerative though. But if you're a fan of Mark and the actors in here, check it out. You know, the serial killer performance is fun. There's a high body count. And like I said, a lot of people get killed, and it's kind of an interesting character in here. There's an interview with Tim Abel here, and there's also a commentary with Demon, David DeFalco, who runs Dark Force, and the actor as well. So check it out if it sounds like it's up your alley. Instinct to Kill, if you're into these kind of cheap kind of action flicks and stuff from the early 2000s, then you should like it. You know, I would prefer Drive over this one, but hey, it's all right. I'm not sure I can give this a whole hard recommend, but it sounds like it's up your alley or you like any of the people involved, then check it out. Okay, the next one here is from Full Moon Entertainment, and this is, I think, one of the 10 for 10s they did, finally finishing those up, and this is Sorority Babes and the Slime Bowl-O-Rama 2. The original was made in 87, 88, and it starred, of course, Brink Stevens, Linnea Quigley. Oh my god, who is the third stream queen in here? I can't believe I'm gonna, I don't want to say, it's not Michelle Bauer, is it? Is it Michelle Bauer? Yeah, it is Michelle Bauer. Thank you. I got that right. So it starts the big three screen queens of that time, you know, on those low budget films. They're all in it. And Hal Havens is in it from Night of the Demons and whatnot. And it's about an imp that is on release and released during the sorority prank or something, where these people are supposed to steal this trophy and this imp comes out and grants them wishes. And, you know, every time a weird entity grants you wishes, they go wrong. They go to shit. So this is like a rehash of that, but it's made on a super low budget, of course. It's made in like the Cleveland area, I assume. It's actually directed by Brink Stevens, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, Brink Stevens directed it. And her and Michelle Bauer have a cameo, which is nice. There's a shout out to Linnea Quigley, and Kelly Maroney's in here. So it's kind of a nice little short piece that's kind of a love letter to the original. There's plenty of nudity, and it's basically rehashed the first one with a lot of gags and stuff and comedy that doesn't really translate to nowadays, of course, right? We have these three kind of college guys that are spying on these girls that are gonna pledge to this sorority. Of course they have to break in the bowling alley and steal something. We know what's going to steal. They're going to steal the bowling trophy, and it's going to have the imp, and the imp's going to wish him a bunch of bad wishes. So that's essentially the plot. It's almost just a rehash of the original. There's a couple good gags in here, like want a shit ton of money, want to be a famous rapper. Of course, those never go right. Just think of Wishmaster, or again, the original Sorority Babes in the Slime Bowl-O-Rama, or The Gate 2. Anytime there's a character that grants you wishes, you know, they're going to go to shit, and that's exactly what happens. Or we go all the way further back to The Monkey's Paw, right? The classic story there. There's a rendition of Tales from the Crypt, of course. So, like, it's just a classic kind of story here. It's cheap, it's low budget, plenty of nudity, very short. The imp looks pretty good. There's some digital effects that aren't wonderful, but overall, it's okay. I mean, it's probably, you know, dated already, being a throwback to the Sorority Babes, the Slime Bowl-O-Rama. They do have a nice shout-out to Linnea Quigley, although she's not in here, but the other two are, and it's nice seeing them. It's nice seeing Scream Queen direct the movie. I would like to see more of this. Unfortunately, there was no special features on the disc. But hey, it is what it is. If it sounds like up your alley, you want a kind of a throwback to Full Moon, late 80s nudity-filled, goofy college humor movies, then check out Sorority Babes and the Slime Bowl-O-Rama 2. It's short. It's kind of sweet. It's definitely cheap. So there you go. Okay, next up is Tear at Ten Killer. I got my Vinegar Syndrome package yesterday, so I was like, oh, what am I going to watch from this bad boy? I'll show the rest in the update, but one I decided to watch was the 4K of Tear at Ten Killer. This is 1986 slasher film, regional slasher film, and this is one that I'd always heard terrible things about. People are like, that's the biggest piece of shit. Like, stuff like this and The Last Slumber Party, and like, those are the worst slashers of all time. Don't watch those two. They're just pure garbage, boarding house, stuff like that. People would throw those out there all the time. But particularly Tear at Ten Killer and Last Slumber Party. Always got a bad rep. So I, you know what, I didn't rush to see him. I probably bought the copies two or three times on these cheapy discs. And my understanding is Tear at Ten Killer never really had a nice release. So people are watching this on crummy, blacked out YouTube videos or VHS or DVD transfers from a VHS. So it's on 4K from the original 16mm, which cracks me up. I love that. Let me see if it's the original or if it's a print. I don't remember exactly. There's HDR, original camera negative, so that's great. Anyways, this is a short, kind of sweet, 127-minute kind of slasher movie. So what we have here is there's a killer going around this summer, like, lake house area, killing women. Of course, the main characters are then introduced. We have a couple of girls, one who's going through some relationship problems. You know, her best friend's like, come to the summer cabin with me for the summer. Doesn't know that she's unwillingly bringing her friend to maybe doom. And there's a weird narration from our character. She's like, if I would have known that this would have happened, you're like, what the fuck? Narration's kind of strange, maybe patching it together. It just seems like an odd choice in the movie, but there's a regional quality too when they go there. So the slasher, of course, is picking them off. They don't really hide the identity of the killer. You accept that we have that, like, kind of possessive boyfriend lurking in the background. So you think, is he part of this? Yada, yada, yada. There's going to be two killers. And the music in here, the soundtrack choices is mine. Or what is it? Something, the soundtrack in here is you have to be mine or something. It's like obviously about a possessive character. And, you know, it fits the movie perfect. It's probably the best part of the movie, to be honest. But I will not lie, watching this summer camp kind of area, this cabin by the lake area in 4K, it just kind of brings back memories of going camping, going swimming in these lakes and stuff. And I'm not going to lie, I have an affinity for that look. I have an affinity for, you know, that kind of like hashtag lake life or some shit. But as obviously all I wear is tank tops and gym shorts, if anybody's ever seen me in public or person, that's all I wear. So like, it's just something that is an aesthetic, you know, wearing, I grew up on a peninsula, you know, surrounded by water. So like, it just speaks to me. I mean, obviously it's not going to be Friday the 13th or anything, or The Burning, but it's not as offensively bad as people were saying. Again, people had probably had expectations, you know, they hadn't seen 450 slashers, since 1980 at that time. But I have seen 450 slashers, and this is better than a handful of them. You know what I mean? It's at least entertaining. And 4K definitely has something to do with that. It does have regional silly charm. They went back and shot a bunch of gore and nudity in here, and the producer's talking about it. It's like, you gotta have these to sell. And I can't imagine, like, a director or writer arguing for this one. Like, no, this is a classic. It's like, if your movie ain't, like, Hitchcock-level suspense, thriller, or, like, you know, even Paul Verhoeven, like, Fourth Man stuff, like, it's just, like... You need that kind of element. You do. I'm sorry. Tarot 10 Killer needs nudity. It needs graphic kills. It needs something. I mean, it does have regional charm and it's fun, but it does need that kind of element as well. It feels like every guy in these movies is a pervert, like from Preacher to Tor to the boyfriend. Everybody's kind of a sleazebag. No good guys here. No good guys at Tarot 10 Killer. It does share some DNA, I would say, with Bloodhook, which is a late kind of slasher movie about a guy who hears cicadas and kind of goes bonkers, which I love. I've actually had that idea for a job. But hey, it is what it is. I never saw Bloodhook until like the last few years, and I'm like, I guess they already did it. Every idea, Simpsons did it. But my idea is a little different. But anyways, back to Tarot 10 Killer. You know, it's fun. I mean, it's a short, sweet slasher with plenty of nudity, and there's some decent kills. There's a throat slit in here. I was like, that's pretty graphic, pretty good, done pretty well. The very, very ending is laugh out loud kind of stuff here, where the stinger at the end, you're like, what? Are we making a sequel? I'm surprised this one has not had a 20-year later sequel, kind of like Mutilator or something like that, and it pops back, or Don't Go in the Basement. It's like, yeah, you got a 20-year sequel to this movie? Yeah, this seems like one that they would do. But yeah, anyways, I enjoyed it. I'm not going to lie. There's some special features on the Blu-ray. The 4K looks great, by the way. There's some special features on the Blu-ray disc. There's a commentary, of course, with the actor-editor Kevin Meyer and actor Mike Wiles. And then the Blu-ray has some extra stuff. As 2 weeks of Tarot, the making of Tarot 10 Killer, brand new making of documentary featuring interviews to the cast and crew, introduction by Kevin Meyer and Mike Wiles, behind the scenes footage with original commentary track by Kevin Meyer, Mike Wiles, multiple original trailers, Divided We Fall, a short film co-written, co-directed by Kevin Meyer and narrated by Tarot 10 Killer director Ken Meyer, with introduction and optional commentary track by Kevin Meyer and actor Mike Wiles, Brother in Arms with Divided We Fall making a featurette with co-writer and co-director Jeff Burr and actor R.A. Milahoff, who played Leatherface in part 3, if I'm not mistaken, with Jeff Burr directed. So behind-the-scenes footage from Divided We Fall with commentary track by Kevin Meyer and Mike Wells. Extensive image gallery for Divided We Fall, reversible cover art, English subtitles. So there we go. A lot of stuff on this 4K. I got to watch the making of, which is about 30 minutes, and it's pretty fun. I enjoy it. It's a nice cover, too. Dare I say it, better than probably Tarot 10 Killer deserves, but also really cool to see all this stuff put together. And I'm finally glad I watched it. I enjoyed it. I'm not picky, guys. I'm not picky. Okay, guys. Let's hop into those 1981 movies.
Woe be unto him who opens one of the seven gateways to hell, because through that gateway, evil will invade the world.
Thank you. Valentine's Day is a curse that'll live on. And no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago. In this little town, when the 14th comes round, there's a silence and fear in the air. Remember the morn that the legend was born, all the shock and the horror was there. Or the legend they say on a Valentine's Day is a curse that'll live on and on. And no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago. And no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago.
Okay, the first up is gonna be a classic here, kind of a classic. It's from the Omen collection, of course, and I've seen the first two Omens and the remake. For some reason, I never saw part three or four. I've never, like, I'm weird with franchises. I usually watch them. Like, I mean, I love some and I'll watch them all, but a lot of times I just don't watch them. Even if I like them, I'll like stop at like two or three. I mean, I saw the first one years ago when I was like young, and then I saw the second one a couple years after that when I was fairly young. And then for the reason, same reason, I didn't see the third one. And this is the Final Conflict, Omen 3, starring Sam Neill. Who else is in here? I know there's gotta be, Don Gordon is the big actor that, kind of surprised me to see Don Gordon in here. Don Gordon's in the, with that crazy Dennis Hopper movie, The Last Picture or something like that. That one that kind of was like a movie that, like, they were pissed, they didn't make any money. He's also in The Borrower by John McNaughton. Don Gordon's a classic character actor. You see him, you recognize him right away. So if you guys don't know the story of The Omen, Damien Thorne, he is the son of a jackal, the son of the devil, and he was kind of born into he was given to a politician's family, Gregory Peck, and whatever. I'm not going to spoil the original Omen. It's a classic. Go see it. 76, Richard Donner. And there was a sequel, I don't remember when that was made, 78, with William Holden's in that one. I remember liking that. It's been years. Who knows if I still like it. A lot of the deaths in these Omen movies are like Final Destination style deaths. So the third one now, Damien Thorne is grown up. He is coming into adulthood. He's in his 30s. It's played perfectly by Sam Neill. Same year as Possession for Sam Neill. Sam Neill kind of is like, you know, I mean, I would say he's a cult actor with this and Possession and Jurassic Park and Mouth of Madness and Event Horizon, Invisible Memoirs of Invisible Man. You know, Sam Neill's done a lot of genre film. So, I mean, he's always kind of been a great actor, a New Zealand guy. So this one, he's kind of starts getting into politics. He runs this kind of crooked company, of course. Don Gordon is his right-hand man. And this is a lot of religious stuff going on here. There's this group of monks that want to stop the Antichrist, right? Because they know who he is and they figured it out. So they found these seven daggers that if he stabbed, it's the only way to stop him, the only way to kill him. Is stabbing with one of these seven daggers. So you have this group of monks trying to assassinate Damien Thorne throughout this movie. Well, he's kind of rising in the political ranks. There's a news reporter that's kind of a love interest that's kind of talking to him, and Sam Neill's kind of getting into her kid and starting to convince him. But there's this kind of like taking control of the situation. But there's this kind of weird element as well, of course, with the religious stuff, is where they're waiting for the son, the newborn, the coming of Christ or whatever, the new Christ. To basically take out the Antichrist. And so he starts killing babies. Any baby born between this time, because he knows when it's born, they got to get taken out. So there's a whole bunch of babies being killed in ridiculous ways. Like, you know, and it's all happening all over the UK and Britain and stuff. It's just a fun scene, fun stuff there. Crazy stuff, to be honest. And the deaths are really graphic in here. There is a scene in this film where a character kind of just wanders back, and it's because Damien wants his political position, and he goes home and sits in the office and shoots himself. And that was one of the most graphic suicides I've ever seen. His brains boom through the nose and his leg twitches. They film his leg twitch afterward, and I'm thinking those little tiny details really like that are kind of what make the scene stand out and the disturbing aspects, you know. Details. What's ever in the details are usually what I would cling on to or what people cling on to, right? Very weird. Very strange things, how the human mind works and how that adds an extra layer of the macabre, you know? If you're seeing gore, nonstop gore, nonstop gore all the time, it kind of loses its potency. But if there's a small little detail within that that adds a sense of humanity or just something a little unnerving like that. It just really goes a long way. And this movie has a couple of those. I enjoyed it. I mean, I like Sam Neill, and I like the characters trying to pick him off. And throughout the movie, you kind of get accustomed to the different monks. There's like seven of them. And overall, this is a good movie. It's a good religious horror film, in kind of the vein of an Omen film, of course, or what, I wouldn't say, maybe Rosemary's Baby, not as quite as good as that, but Reign of Fire, the one with Kirk Douglas, which was kind of like a Omen kind of rip. Was that an Omen rip or more of an Exorcist rip? It's been a while since I've seen that one, too. That's an Italian director, if I'm not mistaken. But Omen 3, The Final Conflict, I enjoyed it. There is an interview with the director, as among some other things on here, and him talking about it was interesting. Very intelligent guy, you can tell. Sometimes, you know, some directors are smart, some are not, some are more interesting than others, but this guy, he seemed to know his stuff, and looking at the movie that was made like 40 years ago, it's interesting stuff. The next one from 1981, bear with me, I hope I say this right, Kizapa, or Kizmata, hopefully that's right, it's a Filipino film by Mike DeLong, and I don't know if you can buy this Blu-ray anywhere, but I'm going to double check, because I didn't really look that hard, but I'm going to buy it. Now, this one you can probably find on YouTube, I believe. There is an HD print running around. This is a strange film. Now, it's listed as horror on Internet Movie Database. Now, I would say this is more of a very, very dark crime drama, but it has, I guess, the psychological and possessive aspects of a horror film. It's made with extreme amount of tension that could kind of cross that line of horror film. My rule when I'm doing these, when I'm going to do my top 25, it has to be included as a horror film on Letterboxd or Internet Movie Database. That's how I'm going to do it, one or the other or both. So essentially what we have here is this overly protective father. He's about 56 years old. He's retired. He was a police officer. This takes place in the Philippines. And his daughter has met somebody that she works with, and they fall for each other, and she's pregnant. Now, he doesn't want to let her marry at first, but he's going to because she's pregnant. And he's overly possessive. The mother's really not does much. She just follows every word that the father says, although you can tell she's extremely miserable and happy. So this daughter is in her, like, she's like mid-20s. And her husband that she's going to marry is in the mid-20s, too. So what happens is he has a father-in-law still in the picture as well. I mean, she has a father-in-law and her husband's father. And he tries to smooth things over at times. But this father character, the guy who plays her father, is just larger than life, kind of bombastic, assholeish, possessive, crazy guy. He drinks beer, he makes laughs, he drives them everywhere. He won't let them have a second of peace. So you just watch the tension grow and grow and grow, and eventually till they run away and they're convinced to come back. And like, there's of course a lot of tragedy here. There's a lot of, you know, just, this is a film that is an hour and what, 30 minutes, right? And I won't say that it doesn't have like a bunch of plot points or a bunch of stuff doesn't happen, but it never feels like it wears out its welcome. It never feels like it's wasting your time. It doesn't seem to be any unneeded scenes, if that makes any sense. And this movie, this story is not like a huge story with a million storylines. It really just follows four or five different characters in this fucked up family drama. And the performance by the father in here is amazing. It's a great performance. It's a dark performance. If this was made in Japan, Katana would have played it. If it was made in Hong Kong, Anthony Wong would have played it. You see what I'm getting at here? If it was made in America by the Coen brothers, John Goodman would have played it. I'm just saying, like, you could see this role being filled by some really great actors. This is a good film. This is a great film. And the ending is dark, and it's based loosely on a true story. I don't know how loosely, but man, it's fucked. It looks great, too. It's a gorgeous-looking movie, and it's dark, depressive sets and house, and you feel claustrophobic. Great one. Check this one out, Kizamata. I would recommend. It's definitely a hidden gem of 1981. Is it a horror film? It's up to you to decide. I would say probably not, but since Internet Movie Database listed as one, I will put it in running for my top 25. It might make it. Great stuff. Check it out if you can. Okay, now Tom Brooker got drawn out for the 19 of the Patreon, and I decided, he said pick one release you hadn't watched from 2022. That was probably written in 2022, but I picked one from 2022, and I decided to pick Female Executioner. This is from Severin, with Bridget Leahy in it. This is an action flick, and now I mixed on the French exploitation, right? A lot of the action movies, like stuff like Brigade of Death, are fucking fantastic masterpieces, and some are just really crummy, like some of the 70s ones that are just so low budget and just have no good action, that are really bad. This one is more in line with Brigade of Death. So Bridget Leahy is this badass kind of crazy cop, and she's after these smut porn kind of pedophile like pushers in the film industry. And she has this crazy aggressive partner as well, who's just a crooked ass cop. Also, Bridget Leahy has like a kind of a stool pigeon that tells her all the things about this one kind of crime boss and this female. And basically, all these kind of pedophiles and all this kind of porn ring leads her to this character, this kind of female crime boss whose son works with her, and she has a pair of brothers that are really violent that works with her. So like it leads them to this kind of deal. And of course there's other characters on the side that get in the way. There's kind of crazy sex with Bridget Leahy and other people having a lot of sex in here. Family members are intertwined. You know, of course Bridget Leahy's sister gets intermingled. Her other partner lost a brother, I think, to one of these criminals. So it's all kind of intertwined. It's absolutely ridiculous, you know what I mean? Like in that French kind of exploitation kind of style, just over the top action, and kind of in the same vein as American 70s vigilante cop movie, or a Euro crime film, like an Italian Euro crime film, like a Puccio Tezzi or something along those lines. But it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of gunplay. There's a lot of explosions. There's a lot of creepy villains. There's a lot of nasty villains, right? Because you add that layer of pedophilia. And the main villain in here is great, too. She's like, I bet you didn't. One thing they didn't know about me, I was a distance runner or a speed runner or a sprinter or some shit like that. I enjoyed this. I thought it looked great. I thought they remastered it. This is the kind of stuff I love seeing Severin or any other company put out, Vinegar Syndrome, because they're movies that aren't really on my radar. Yes, I know the lead actress, and she's in about a lot of John Rollon movies. And she's in, of course, Calvaire. She's an excellent actress. She's gorgeous. She's got a unique look. Always enjoy seeing her. She was just in that Broken Mirrors movie for a small period, I believe. So, like, she's just everywhere in Europe, and she's an excellent actress. So, but seeing her in the lead here in this kind of action thing, being a badass female, I eat that stuff up, okay? So I'd really recommend checking this out. You could do a lot worse. If you like these kind of action movies, these kind of exploitation films, then check it out. It's ruthless, too. As far as the special features are concerned, we definitely have some here. The Cop in Nylon Stockings, interview with director Mikhail Caputo and actress Bridget Leahy. Hold on, girl. Hold on tight, girly. Location visit with director and Bridget Leahy. Les Violets Buse, The Blue Shutters, 1987 short film, and starring the lead actress here. So if you want some sexy, sleazy action, then look no further than The Female Executioner. Let's get in these questions and comments and concerns and all that jazz. Fetish Magic, that cute-ass thumbnail. Okay, D Gulag 3733. I've always liked Bog. I didn't let my opinion get bogged down by all the bad reviews. Ha, love this channel. Thank you very much. Movie Junkie Reviews 84. Have you watched the 2019 Swamp Thing series? It lasted one season, but it had shades of horror. I actually really enjoyed it. I heard nothing but good things about that series, and everybody was like, it's great. And then I was like, it's canceled. So I was like, yeah, I guess I don't have to watch it. I mean, I should watch it. I do like Swamp Thing. I grew up on Swamp Thing, like the live action and the cartoon. I had all the toys. So Movie Junkie Reviews 84. Have you watched, Chris Harper 2317. I did watch Evil Dead Rises and it was good, but for me the original is better. I would agree. Ilk Vomit 88. Yo, can someone throw this man some Bruce Lee flicks in his Patreon, please? Ha, I hope so. The Nick Muel from Belgium. Frankenstein Island looks like one of the Project Ed Wood would be ashamed of, and that's saying something. It's a monster flick and not in a good way. I mean, it's not that bad. I mean, Ed Wood would not be ashamed of Frankenstein Island. It's probably, you know, which film has too many remakes? I feel Invasion of the Body Snatchers has been done to death. Some of the latter adaptations were done by pod people, I suspect. Honestly, if you look back in history, people always try to blame remakes, but there's a lot of them. Phantom of the Opera's had dozens. Hunchback of Notre Dame's had a lot. Frankenstein's had so many. But these are like stories that are based on literature. You know, you can get away with more literature. I mean, Invasion of the Body Snatchers is a story too. But if you think about Invasion of the Body Snatchers, that kind of story arc, that kind of story with the taking over the bodies is always relevant. You can always put it on different things. It translates really well. But you have the 56 one, which is amazing. You have the 78 one, which is amazing. The 90s one by Abel Ferreira, involving written script by like Stuart Gordon and Larry Cohen. That's pretty good. Underrated. And then I never saw the 2000s one. But that's only four. I think we're due for an Invasion of the Body Snatchers. I mean, of course, we have like spin-offs and rip-offs like Seed People. And Puppet Masters is another story kind of in the same vein from 94, which isn't a bad movie at all. So then, too, if Carrie White had attended your high school, how would you have treated her? How infectious is picking on someone bullying? Honestly, where I went to high school, it feels like a lot of kids got picked on and you picked on people. It was an awful time. I'm not going to lie. I wasn't a great guy, but I also got fucked with. I mean, I wasn't perfect. I wasn't the nicest person on earth in high school. Sometimes you really don't like yourself. Sometimes, you know, you get fucked with too, and then you fuck with people. It's kind of a vicious cycle in high school, you know, and they always portray, there is always one person that gets fucked by everybody, and that's a shame. You know, I wouldn't have picked on Carrie White. Look at Carrie. I mean, Carrie, just not somebody that you really mess with, because Carrie does nothing. Like, why would you say anything to her? I mean, like, I can't see picking on Carrie. I really can't. But hey, I mean, because Carrie's quiet. Like, I can't see somebody, like, it's hard to see Carrie getting picked on, really. You have to be really ruthless. But I mean, her mom, it's fucked up, you know? Bullying's an awful thing. And as a society, I know that a lot of us are guilty of it or allowing it to happen. So, I mean, I don't really know what to say about it. But I would have liked to think that I wouldn't have fucked with Carrie White. And then we have, will you be checking out the new Robert Englund documentary? Sure, I will. I'm not in a rush to see it, but I will definitely welcome it. I hope you're feeling better already, Dave. I still wish for you a long and good health. Till next time. Me too. I do feel better. My back feels better. And I did get an ultrasound of my liver. And it doesn't look like I have gallstones or tumors. So maybe I just have a fatty liver. But the results aren't back just yet. Up, dude, 1382. Face blue smiling. Thank you. That's how it translates. Sorry. Thanos 43 Infinity. I get the feeling that Frankenstein Adling having Cameron Mitchell in it would be like Cameron Mitchell, and it would be the Halloween red letter media pick for best of the worst. I love Cameron Mitchell. Travis Linscomb 6200. I saw The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Miss Osborne for the first time this year and loved it. It's the perfect movie for my demented Euro cult taste. It also seems like it takes the Blood for Dracula, Flesh for Frankenstein formula and perfects it. Plus, Borowchuk makes a sleaziness in an art house mode. No doubt. And I enjoyed it quite a bit too. That was the second time watch for me. See, so like we have that. We have like Blood for Dracula, Frost for Frankenstein. Then we have our version of Dr. Jekyll. Is there like a sleazy Invisible Man or a sleazy like Hunchback story? I know that there's a Nashy Hunchback story I need to watch. So maybe that will be that one. But I mean, there's like a weird line of class and art in those movies that I don't think that Nashy's going to exactly duplicate, although he's capable of making good art films or horror art like the Frenchman Murders. But I don't know if Hunchback from the Morgue is going to be that. I'll have to watch it. Ken Coakley, 3959. I saw a double feature of Swamp Thing and Return of Swamp Thing at the local cinema. It was a midnight thing, so I got home pretty late. I had the original Swamp Thing on DVD that was supposed to be the PG version, but it had Adrienne Barbeau nude scene. That run of discs was related to Recult. I do remember that. Speaking of Adrienne Barbeau, she did work with Craven Romero Carpenter, but technically she worked with Argento on Two Evil Eyes. She was in Romero's segment, but Argento has a directing credit on the poster. Yeah, I'm sure he was on set too, working with her, so maybe producing. The film had a really good cast. It was nice seeing David and Wes Craven working together again. It was great seeing a young Ray Wise, too short of a time. I agree. I've been a Ray Wise kick lately. For the past few years, Wise has found a second career in faith-based films. I love Ray Wise. I mean, he never does a bad job, no matter what he's in. A year after Swamp Thing, Louis Jourdain played a James Bond villain in Octopussy. Very cool. I also saw, yeah, he was in the 1970 movie, I think, like Hear No, it was like a TV movie I covered. I also saw Evil Dead Rise because a reviewer said it was like Demons 2. And since I'm a fan of the two Demon films, I thought I would check it out even though it was Ashless. The only similarity to Demons 2 is the fact that both took place in an apartment building. I agree 100%. When We Were Kings was about the Rumble in the Jungle and Czar. Of course, all athletes, trainers, and sports commentators sounded intelligent. There was no such thing as TikTok. I am lucky enough to have been around for Muhammad Ali. He was bigger than Michael Jordan was in the 90s. Ali had his own cartoon show in the 70s. Jordan did as well, but he shared the spotlight with Bo Jackson and Wayne Gretzky. Yeah, it seems like such a different time. I mean, growing up, Muhammad Ali was still prevalent, but it wasn't like he was in the 70s. And just watching that, like those comments, man, it was so different. It was such a different time. But yeah, we're going to get into that update, guys. Okay, here we are for the update. Pretty good size update, most of it from Vinegar Syndrome. But first up is My Best Friend is a Vampire from Vestron series. Now, I don't remember if I ever saw this one, but I think it's got David Warner in it, if I'm not mistaken. It's got a bunch of people in this. This looks like a lot of fun. Who's that? Renee something. I can't remember this guy's name. Disc 30. The Vestron movies have gotten very affordable, and I fucking love it. It's very cool. We also got my little replacement disc for Showgirls from Vinegar Syndrome. Automatically just send it. Okay, so here we go. Mutantes, Del N 2000, La Rata Maldita, Dita. And this is the Demon Rat. This is a Mexican horror film. Looks like a lot of fun. Looks like a lot of trashy fun. I love this shit. Keep them coming. This is a VSA. So if you really want Demon Rat, make sure you pick it up now from 1992. Looks fun. There we go. And we have Psycho Girls, which I had an MGM tape, one of those Amazon exclusives. And I never watched this thing, man. It looks like a lot of fun. It's so bizarre looking, right? 86, if I'm not mistaken. They got it as 85, but ooh. Yeah, I remember there was a kind of discrepancy on this one. I'd never seen this one. It looks wild, though. Oh, the first one from... this is a VCI originally put this out. This is Gorgo. I remember fucking Gorgo as a kid. A 4K of Gorgo from Vinegar Syndrome. I remember liking this. This is a British kaiju movie, if I'm not mistaken. And I rented this all the time, you know. It was easy to convince my parents to let me rent stuff like Gorgo and Godzilla and all that kind of stuff and King Kong because they knew it was going to be relatively clean. Sometimes I'd get away with stuff like or a PG-13. And a long time, my mom didn't register that unrated was worse than R. So I got away with a couple of those. Non-rated usually was clean, but unrated, oh no, I got away with a couple of those. Then we have Delirium. This is by, who did this? Renato Pacelli, which I covered this movie before on DVD on the 22 Shots. And this is a good film. This is a sleazy film. And I remember enjoying it quite a bit. Pacelli is an underrated Italian guy. You know, Renato Pacelli did some good work. Usually his films. I think I liked all his films he did. Then he did The Reincarnation of Isabel, too. And his films are unique. They're, like, weird and like, gothic, but creepy. So here we have Midnight Spares, and this is from Umbrella. This is from the partner label, of course, from Vinegar Syndrome. Looks pretty rad. I actually prefer that cover right there way more than the slip. Probably the original. Then we have Once a Month. Once a Moth. Jeez Louise, Dave. And this is from, which company is this? I always forget. This is the one that specializes in Asian cinema or Hong Kong cinema. Yeah. Looks good.
This doesn't look Asian at all.
This isn't Asian at all, Dave. This is probably Mexican or Spanish, you jackass. This is not the Asian company. So there we have Dirty Money. I can't keep up with all the partner labels, to be honest. I'm become a bad fucking collector. I usually just go when they have it every month, and anything that catches my interest, because I have the thing, I pick up. But, you know, I'm not too versed on a lot of them. I read about them, and then I'm like, that sounds like it's something I'd want. Then we have The Heart is Deceitful of All by Above All Things, a film by Aja Argento. Very cool. Let's see what is in the mind of Aja Argento. I'm very curious about this. Made in 2004. It's a country of origin. USA, UK, France, Italy, and Japan. What a crazy combination. Oop. Almost on the home stretch here. We have Urban Dreams. And this is two homosexual films by Eloy de la Iglesia, who's an excellent director. You know, he did Cannibal Man, which made the Video Nasties list, and a slew of these kind of these kid kind of crime films in Spain, which are very good. So he's a good director. I've covered a couple of his films. So what are the two films? Hidden Pleasures and Confessions of a Congressman. Oh, a congressman being in the closet. That's unrealistic. I'm just kidding. Obviously. Okay, then we have The Hole in the Fence. Who is this? Altered Innocence. Okay, very cool. The cover art's pretty gnarly. Looks very depressing. And we got a couple more here on the home stretch. The Tortured Soul Trilogy. These look sleaze-tastic and bizarre. And that's Saturn's Core, of course. Saturn's Core does some great stuff. I'm really sad to see Culture Shock leave. Honestly, that was one of my favorite labels. So it was fun. I thought Fun City was pretty good. But man, I'm really kind of bummed that that Culture Shock's leaving the Vinegar Syndrome deal. And then last but certainly not least, guys, Video Diary of a Lost Girl. Now, I covered this movie. I got a screener for it years ago. And this is by, who is it? Lindsay Denenberg. And this movie, nobody ever talked about it. It didn't get any release until now. This is a gem. This is a very cute, clever, fun movie. Bizarre film. Looks cool. It's been years. When was this made? Like 2013, if I'm not mistaken, man. I can't believe this thing. 2012. It got sat on for so long. Over 10 fucking years. Recommended. Video Diary of a Lost Girl. Watch this from EGFA. Great stuff. So anyways, we're out of here, guys.
Okay, guys. Thank you very much for watching. And as always, have a good one.